This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
famine could soon be a reality in Somalia due to the current severe drought.
That's Brian Tisdoul with the WHO's Eastern Mediterranean Office. Details coming up.
Also, the UN says a lot more money is needed to respond to the humanitarian crisis in Somalia. And Italian authorities have arrested three different groups of people on charges of people smuggling.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
As the humanitarian crisis in Somalia continues to deteriorate due to drought and conflict, the UN says a lot more money is needed to respond to those in need. A revised humanitarian response plan calls for $1.5 billion. More than $600 million has been made available or pledged so far. But that still leaves a gap of $875 million for the rest of the year. The latest assessment says several consecutive seasons of poor rainfall have led to acute water shortages, large-scale crop failure, and a sharp rise in food prices. There continues to be an elevated risk of famine in parts of the country. More than 6.7 million people are said to be in need of protection and humanitarian assistance. That's more than half of Somalia's population. About 680,000 people have been displaced by drought since November. Also, disease outbreaks have spread. More than 36,000 cases of acute watery diarrhea and cholera are reported since January, along with 5,700 suspected cases of measles. Against that backdrop, Britain is hosting a summit on the Somali crisis. Prime Minister Theresa May opened the summit.
As an international community, our commitment to Somalia matters. Not just because it is right to help Somalia to overcome the threat of terrorism and the devastating effects of years of famine and bloodshed, but also because these challenges that face Somalia affect us all. If Somalia is a foothold for terrorist groups like Al-Shabaab and Daesh, if global trade is hijacked by pirates in the Indian Ocean, or if millions are continually displaced in a desperate bid to escape poverty and drought, the impact of instability in Somalia is felt across the whole region and the wider world.
May says the world should support Somalia's new president, Mohamed Abdullahi Farmajo.
So our task today is not to tell Somalia what to do, nor to impose our own solutions on this country from afar, but rather to get behind the new president's efforts and to support the Somali people as they work to build this new future for their country.
Meanwhile, President Farmajo told the summit that he is aware of the high expectations of the Somali people for improved security and basic services.
I will spare no effort to realizing the promise of my campaign, which was to fight Somalia's three major enemies: terrorism, corruption, and poverty.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres told the London summit that fighting continues to devastate Somalia, along with violations of human rights and international humanitarian law. The UN chief says Al-Shabaab is recruiting and exploiting children. He also warns about widespread sexual violence against displaced women and girls and members of minority clans.
The World Health Organization is among those calling for immediate action to save lives in Somalia. It warns the country is experiencing a devastating cycle of hunger and disease. Brian Tisdoul is with the WHO's Eastern Mediterranean Office. From London, he spoke to VOA's Jody Kapawa about the agency's concerns about Somalia.
Famine could soon be a reality in Somalia due to the current severe drought. A number of things happen when there's severe drought. Of course, it leads to food insecurity. And there are currently 3.3 million people who are food insecure in Somalia. The risk there is that we could have up to 1 million children acutely malnourished this year alone. The other issue with drought, of course, is that it leads to a lack of clean water. A lack of clean water, unfortunately, spells an increase in the risk for outbreaks of diseases. And sadly, Somalia has been ravaged with the largest outbreak of cholera that the country has seen in the last 5 years. And then if that wasn't enough, low vaccination rates and large movements of people and overcrowding leads to an increase in measles. And indeed, sadly, measles is also on the rise in the country.
What response has the WHO and its partners launched so far to try to deal with these problems?
Basically, in the last couple of months, working with its partners, WHO has delivered nearly 50 tons of medicines and medical supplies to provide life-saving support to 4.3 million people. I mentioned cholera earlier, and cholera treatment centres are now operational in 40 districts. And the number of surveillance sites for epidemic-prone diseases has been increased across the country. And working with the Ministry of Health and our partners, WHO has also conducted the first national oral cholera vaccination campaign in Somalia, reaching 450,000 people. And indeed, a second campaign is ongoing, targeting another 460,000 people. That being said, it's really a tip of the iceberg in terms of trying to meet the needs in Somalia.
The UN is calling for at least $1.5 billion this year to try to deal with the humanitarian crisis. What more does the WHO think should be done in Somalia?
One of the problems for the health sector, in particular in Somalia, is that everybody seems to be in agreement in terms of the scale of the needs. So the scale of the needs related to the ongoing drought and the scale of the needs in relation to providing a response to cholera and other diseases. But what we find in WHO is that there is a lack of connection between the recognition of the scale of the needs and indeed the international community's response to those needs. For example, for the pre-famine operational plan, the health partners are looking for $85 million to respond to reach 4.3 million people just in the first half of 2017. And WHO is looking for $13 million. We're seriously underfunded. We're at 18% in terms of a response to the WHO needs and only slightly higher in terms of the response to the health sector needs. And of course, one of the things I should have mentioned, Joe, the maternal mortality rate in Somalia is one of the highest in the world. One in 18 women dies in childbirth, and one out of every 7 Somali children dies before seeing their 5th birthday. So when you put all of that together, it paints a very bleak picture for which we're, as WHO, we're appealing for the support of the international community.
Brian Tisdall is with the WHO's Eastern Mediterranean office. From London, he spoke to VOA's Jody Capua.
Two days after being fired as head of South Sudan's army, General Paul Malong says he's returning to the capital, Juba. That's despite statements yesterday that he planned to return to his farm and lead a quiet life in Awail. Reuters reports Malong stated that he did not know what he would do in Juba, but that he would listen to those who called for his return. He's expected back in Juba tomorrow. Malong had rejected accusations in a UN report last year that he had the ultimate command responsibility for the military campaign in Unity State that caused widespread destruction and the targeting of civilians. Famine has been declared in 2 counties of Unity State. Italian authorities have arrested 3 different groups on charges of people smuggling. The arrests involve Nigerians, Libyans, and Somalis. Chilling eyewitness accounts say the 3 Nigerian smugglers brutally beat migrants repeatedly, even killing some and causing severe injury to others. Reporter Josephine McKenna spoke with me about the arrest as well as reaction from the NGO Sea-Watch after the Libyan Coast Guard blocked its attempted rescue of 500 migrants from a wooden boat.
3 different incidents. 2 alleged Libyan people smugglers have been arrested by Italian police in the Sicilian city of Catania. 3 Nigerians have been arrested in the Sicilian town of Agrigento, accused of trafficking, sexual assault and murder, as well as torture. And in another incident yesterday, Somali people smugglers, alleged people smugglers, were arrested in Bari in southern Italy and other towns across Italy. So we have 3 separate incidents in relation to people smuggling.
Also, with the arrest of the Nigerians, I understand there were some very horrific details that were relayed. So what were they saying happened?
The 3 Nigerians believed to have landed on the island of Lampedusa off the coast of Sicily on April 16. And since that time, the Italian police and Italian prosecutors have been listening to witnesses, taking account of what they have seen, what they have claimed, and we're seeing extraordinary accounts, eyewitness accounts, of what these men are alleged to have done. Now, these three Nigerians alleged to have tortured migrants. One said that his legs had been tied up and he had been repeatedly beaten on the soles of the feet with serious injuries and fractures, but others were much more serious. One said that his brother was violently beaten and died several days later in 2016 because of injuries sustained by one of these migrants. Another one said that gasoline was poured around him and he was set on fire. And another one said that these African men beat at least five migrants and he watched while one of them died immediately and the others were seriously injured and died several days later from the injuries that they sustained in these attacks. So really horrific accounts that the police are using to put together a case against these three Nigerians that have been arrested.
Also, I understand that there's outrage from the NGO Sea Watch after they said the Libyan Coast Guard blocked a rescue attempt.
Yes, as we know, the Italian government has reached an agreement to support the Libyan Coast Guard and try and build up security, try to stop the flow of migrants that we're seeing into Italy and the rest of Europe. And we had an incident where the Libyan Coast Guard intercepted the German NGO Sea Watch as it was trying to rescue 500 migrants packed on a very rickety wooden boat, and the Coast Guard intervened. Sea Watch filmed what happened, and they are claiming that this Coast Guard vessel came way too close to its own ship and nearly caused a collision, and that certainly looks the case on the video that they've put on their website. The Libyan Coast Guard picked up these 500 migrants and took them back to Tripoli, and we're not quite sure what's happened to them since. Now, Sea-Watch says this is a very dangerous incident. They are demanding that the EU change this policy immediately, and they are also demanding an independent investigation about what happened in this particular incident.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome.
Past the hour, you are listening to African News Tonight on the Voice of America. President Trump has nominated a former congressman and ambassador to be the new head of the USAID, the U.S. Agency for International Development. Mark Green is a former representative from the state of Wisconsin and was ambassador to Tanzania. The international aid organization Oxfam says it welcomes Green's nomination, saying he has committed himself to fighting global poverty and has a long track record on international development. His nomination comes as a time the Trump administration is proposing big cuts in foreign aid.
A spokesman for Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe has denied Mugabe is sleeping when he closes his eyes for long periods at public events. AFP quotes George Charamba as saying President Mugabe is simply resting his eyes from bright lights. The Zimbabwe leader often has his eyes closed at public events, including the recent World Economic Forum meeting on Africa. The spokesman says at 93 years old, Mugabe's eyes cannot suffer bright lights. Mugabe is currently in Singapore for what's described as a regular medical checkup.
Uganda is preparing to host a refugee summit together with the UN in an effort to drum up international support for refugees in the country. The June summit in Kampala aims to raise $2 billion. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
Uganda hosts the biggest refugee population in Africa. It provides shelter for 1.2 million refugees from South Sudan, Burundi, DRC, Somalia, Rwanda, and Eritrea. The number has more than doubled from 500,000 during the second half of 2016 due to mass exodus of South Sudanese who are fleeing war, violence, and food shortages. As a result, the Uganda government says it urgently needs financial support to continue providing humanitarian assistance. This is the basis for the forthcoming Uganda Solidarity Summit on Refugees, which is to be jointly hosted by President Yoweri Museveni and the UN Secretary General, June 22nd and 23rd. Uganda's Prime Minister Dr. Ruhakana Rugunda says the summit seeks to raise new funding for the humanitarian and development needs of both refugees and host communities.
It is critical that refugees and host communities are provided with an environment in which they can coexist in safety and also in dignity. This is why this forthcoming Solidarity Summit is important for raising awareness and mobilizing additional resources for Uganda to adequately continue responding to this humanitarian situation. We call for urgent international solidarity and burden sharing.
Uganda spends $150 million annually to support refugees and host communities. It receives an additional $150 million from the UN, partners and other agencies. However, Rugunda says with the new refugee arrivals from South Sudan, Uganda is grappling with an annual funding gap of $2 billion.
We are hoping that through the generous giving of governments, foundations, and private sector agencies, we will be able to raise the $2 billion from the summit. That is the short-term funding gap we are currently facing to take us for 1 year. The requirement for the next 4 years is about $8 billion, translating to $2 billion per year.
UN Resident Coordinator Rosa Malango says the summit will allow the world to see Uganda's contribution to the Comprehensive Refugee Response Framework, which gives dignity to people in difficulty.
Uganda's settlement model is globally acclaimed because it provides protection to refugees and host communities, peaceful coexistence side by side, ensuring the resilience capacities of refugees and host communities are strengthened together. This model is a manifestation for us in the international community of the thin line between humanitarian action and sustainable development. And we are mobilizing support for 12 districts hosting refugees in Uganda. It is imperative to note that these 12 districts have some of the country's highest levels of poverty and the lowest levels of human development indicators. We do not believe that Uganda can nor should handle Africa's largest refugee crisis alone.
The deputy country representative for the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, Ajit Fernando, is optimistic the summit will encourage peaceful coexistence between refugees and host communities in Uganda.
People, when they come to Uganda, they get freedom of movement. They get a place to live. They get access to services. They are treated and welcomed like people in the same country. This does not happen in every refugee situation. The host communities are accepting people when they themselves sometimes struggle. And that is the mark of humanity. So when we are looking and asking for the summit to be a success, it is to make sure that these noble things that are happening are strengthened and do not become a burden to the country.
Uganda has been receiving about 2,000 South Sudan refugees per day for the last 6 months. It is projected that 400,000 more will arrive in the country by the end of this year. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
Journalists in Cameroon say they are struggling to do their jobs amid restrictions over coverage of the ongoing strike in English-speaking zones and the Boko Haram conflict. Moki Edwin Kinziga reports from Yaoundé.
In Cameroon, 8 journalists have been arrested in connection with their coverage of a controversial strike in English-speaking parts of the country that began in November. In March, the National Communication Council, NCC, suspended another 18 reporters and media organizations. The NCC said they failed to respect professional norms and ethics, some had published reports critical of the state's handling of the strike, while others had reported on concerns raised over the repatriation of Nigerian refugees displaced by Boko Haram. Peter Esoka is president of the NCC. He told VOA, journalists must report responsibly.
Now, if you go beyond respect of the laws and the law comes down on you like a sledgehammer, it's your fault. That's where responsibility also comes. If you don't respect what is supposed to guide a nation, there's chaos. Do you allow for chaos because you're talking about freedom? No.
Journalists in Cameroon say that is what is at stake. Press freedom.
We know that a newspaper is a marketplace of ideas. We can talk about federalism, not necessarily to promote it, but we can talk about the merits and demerits of federalism. So when you slam a ban on a topic like that, you cannot say that the press is free in Cameroon.
Kininsom is bureau chief at the Post newspaper regional office in Yaoundé. He is referring to a new warning issued April 23 by the NCC that media should not report on demands for cessation or a return to federalism by strikers in English-speaking zones. At Nsom's newsroom and others like it around the country, reporters say the restrictions have had a chilling effect. Eugene Fongwa is editor-in-chief of the Standard Tribune.
For instance, we have criminal libel, which is like a permanent axe over the head of the journalist, which means that the simple fact that you can go to jail for doing journalism is a deterrent to free work. And so you find that a lot of journalists have gone into self-censorship.
Authorities have arrested journalists under both the 2014 counter-terrorism law and the revised penal code of 2016. Three journalists for privately owned media were brought to court in January for failure to disclose information that officials say could harm state security, specifically on the issue of armed groups from the troubled Central African Republic operating in Cameroon. The three were released on bail. Last month, a military tribunal sentenced a reporter for the Radio France International Hausa service to 10 years in prison over charges of complicity to terrorism. Cameroon's Minister of Communication and Government spokesperson, Issa Chiruma, said all arrested journalists will get a fair trial.
A few of these journalists found themselves in breach of justice for reason having nothing to do with the ethical and deontological norms of their profession. I am mostly thinking of those who are accused of threats to public security, national integrity, or being accomplice with terrorist activities. For each of these cases, they were brought before competent courts, which rules out in all freedom and all independence.
Some journalists in the country have taken to wearing black as a silent form of protest. Both Freedom House and Reporters Without Borders downgraded Cameroon in global press freedom indexes released last month. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaoundé.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Vasco Volerich, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Music time in Africa. Savor the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in feast your ears and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Friday at 0900 and Saturday and Sunday at 0900, 15, 20, and 2200 hours UTC.